Business in the Okanagan matters. This is Law Talk with lawyers Clay Williams and Tanveer Gill from FH&P Lawyers LLP. They talk business and take your questions at podcast@fhplawyers.com. Now, here's Clay Williams.
Welcome to another edition of FH&P Lawyers Law Talk. I'm Clay Williams. I'm a partner at FH&P Lawyers LLP. And with me, as per usual, is Tanveer Gill, Esquire. Is that Esquire?
What?
Are you still an Esquire? Female lawyers? In the old days, lawyers used to get that Esquire thing.
If they were female?
I don't know. That's what I'm wondering.
Jesus. So,
Tanveer Gill is with me. She may or may not be an Esquire.
I missed last week's podcast recording. What was I doing? Oh, yeah, I was prepping to go on vacation. Now I'm back from vacation. So
all right.
I'm back.
We've got you back, eh? Okay, so today I think we've got an interesting topic. It's shareholders agreements.
Yeah.
And, what is a shareholders agreement?
Yeah, so I've been doing a lot more lately than I have done in the past. I don't know if it's just that maybe real estate's a little bit slower, so I have a little bit more business stuff rolling across my desk. I don't know how you feel. But yeah, just a lot of shareholder agreements and all different types. We have, you know, people who are taking over a company that's already functioning and has been years and years in business, or two people or a few people, you know, coming together to make a brand new business and just wanting something in writing between the shareholders, setting out what's going to happen between them.
Or also, you know, existing businesses that are bringing on new partners.
New partners, yeah.
And so that's kind of the takeaway from this, is whenever there is a corporation with more than one shareholder, I guess as a husband and wife, I don't usually get a shareholders agreement. One of those mom and pop husband and wife type of businesses.
No.
Do you?
Yeah, very rarely.
Yeah, I don't know that that's so necessary, but
I mean, what if it's a second or third marriage?
Well, there you go. That'd be something we would ask. That's a good point. But usually, you know, we're talking about when we've got people in partnership doing business. I'm using partnership kind of in a loose sense, that each of them has some shares in a corporation and they are in business together pursuing a profit.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that case, I think you have to have a shareholders agreement.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen the downsides.
Yeah. One of the biggest questions I get asked is about directors. So we might have a business structure. Let's say it's two people who are very hands-on and doing all the day-to-day work, and then a few silent partners. And they want to make sure that the directors are going to consist of XYZ individual. So you are often drafting a shareholders agreement to set out who the directors are going to be. And how many directors are going to be in play at all times.
I think it's really, really important in that situation to record the intentions of the shareholders as to whether or not they want to be in management or not. Let's get that agreement right up front. And so what you can do in a shareholders agreement is have the shareholders agree to vote their shares to install certain directors.
Yeah, and another big one is, what happens if you want out? What happens if one of the shareholders is just given an offer that's way too good to pass up and they want to take it, but the other shareholders aren't in agreement with it? So we do a lot of drafting on things called piggyback rights and shotgun clauses, draw along rights, and all of those are a different way of sort of triggering things if you want to sell.
Yeah, and I guess in my mind, I kind of organize it a little differently. I think of a right of first refusal is something that's really necessary to keep a closely held corporation closely held, so you're not end up doing business with a partner's ex-wife or something like that, or heirs.
Yeah. So what Clay's talking about is shareholders will often have a right of first refusal, setting out that if somebody wants out, the first thing that's going to happen is the current shareholders, maybe a certain class or other classes, but the shareholders that are already together are going to have the first right to buy. If they don't want to and they choose not to exercise the right, then it might be a opportunity to open that up to have somebody else come in. But yeah, it's a way of protecting who you're going to do business with.
And the other thing that you mentioned, I think that we should spend a little time on, is the dispute mechanism. And you mentioned a shareholders agreement. And let's just tell our listeners, under the terms of the shotgun clause, a shareholder desiring to offer all of its investment in the company may give notice to other shareholders requiring that the other shareholders sell their investment to the person that started this proceeding at a certain price, or alternatively purchase the person that started all this at that same price on those same terms. So It's kind of, I'll cut the pie and you choose a half.
Yeah, it's probably like, I mean, the name itself probably scares people, shotgun clause, but Essentially it is probably one of the more scarier ones. And it essentially is sort of last step, exit plan, I want out. So either buy me out or I'm going to buy you out, but you want out.
It's a pretty draconian way to deal with things, not something that is necessary in every type of shareholders agreement, but it's just one of the ways of a dispute mechanism. If all else fails, you can get out.
Yeah. And there's lots of other options that you have that you can add that don't have to be the shotgun clause, and not everyone wants it in there, but it's one of those options. And I mean, if you think of all the issues that we see where people don't have shareholder agreements, it's often ones where we say, oh, well, if only you had the right of first refusal, if only you had this, because when problems come up, they'll say, now what?
Well, but one of the things that I did want to talk about is, you know, compulsory buyouts. And so what happens, for instance, if a shareholder dies? You know, I think it's really important that the shareholders agree on those circumstances where the other shareholders or the company have to buy the shares.
Yeah, I mean, let's say, you know, I am in business with Clay and Clay dies and all of a sudden his crazy 25-year-old son has now stepped into his shoes and taken over.
I was going to say 25-year-old third wife.
I thought you were going to say wife too. We're in Kelowna, so not, you know, not unimaginable. but that would essentially happen if there's nothing setting out what's going to happen at death.
Yeah, and it's I think it goes both ways. Like if, for instance, I was in a business with other shareholders and I was to die, I would like to know that my estate, my heirs, would get some money out of the corporation. That's what I mean by that compulsory buyout. Yeah. But there's other situations where you can provide options too.
Yeah.
Things like a defaulting shareholder.
Yeah.
You know, you can agree, for instance, to do a cash call where if you are, say, investing in real estate, you're building, you can go to the shareholders in advance. You can agree we're going to all contribute more money. And if you don't do that, what? You're a defaulting shareholder.
Yeah.
Others can buy you out.
Yeah.
Those type of things.
Yeah. We also always want to have something setting out what are situations that require unanimous consent. So what are the key situations where you need every single person to say yes?
Really important when there's minority shareholders, especially. And, you know, that can really provide some protection to those people who haven't come in as full, you know, partners. But also, you know, if there's three shareholders, for instance, it's easy for two to gang up on another.
And like give an example, things that we'll have typically seen on this type of list where you need everyone is approval of, you know, budgets or changing a budget, buying any other companies or buying large assets over a certain value, expenditures over a certain value, entering into other contracts, maybe changing a signing authority, maybe changing a managing employee, things that are key to the business that everyone will want to vote on. And it changes when you have different businesses in front of you. What their interests are and what they want to have unanimous is obviously going to depend on the type of business that they're running.
Yeah, one of the takeaways is that they sure are flexible.
Yeah.
So they can really be written to deal with what the shareholders want. But let's get those expectations out.
Yeah, like I did one where one of the key terms they wanted is what happens if any of them were to go through a divorce. Instant buyout.
Of course.
Because at that point, you could be putting your company up for liability or your interest in that company and holding them up on something. So their terms essentially said if there's any type of marriage breakdown or divorce.
Was that a compulsory or was that an option event?
No, it was compulsory.
You had to sell. Oh, that is interesting. Yeah. Usually I'll put that in as an option event because, hey, who knows? Maybe you like the wife more than you do your partner.
No, it was compulsory.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a good example of making sure you're doing business with who you want to do business with.
Yeah, and also makes listeners understand all the different scenarios that will, you know, trigger the need for a shareholders agreement that you might not have even thought about. So if you're in a business or you're going into a business, whether it's, you know, you're joining one that's already functioning or opening up your own, these are all things that are going to affect it that you might not even realize. You know, death, marriage, divorce.
Bankruptcy, insolvency. Yeah. Those are also really important that you get a compulsory or an option event when those type of things occur.
Yeah.
Do you know something that just occurred to me that we haven't talked about?
What?
Is that the shareholders can also give guidelines to the directors as to how profits are going to be distributed. So people, may not realize, but it's the directors that say that make the decision as to whether shares are going to be dividended or not and what happens with those profits. So, as for a minority shareholder, you might have a certain expectation that you're going to get some money out of this company, and that might not be because the directors decide to go buy a new building or give themselves a management bonus or something.
Yeah. And like the way that companies are set up, you will have an idea initially because there will be articles in a company no matter what, whether you have a shareholders agreement or not, setting out, you know, what class of shares has what rights. So if that's going to be changed, shareholders have to vote whether they're a minority or not. But with other types of situations, like Clay just mentioned, yes, you would need to have a shareholders agreement that could set out all those different scenarios.
Yeah, I don't know if we have time today to get into it, but, you know, you mentioned the articles of the company. And so the articles are the public searchable way that a company is to be run.
The amount of times I've asked people, do you have a shareholders agreement? And they send me articles. I don't understand why.
Well, certain things have to be in the articles. Yeah. But the nice thing about the shareholders agreement is that it is a private agreement. It can't be, it's not searchable.
Yeah.
So anybody can come in and search the article. I say come in because I'm old. In the old days, when it's one of the first things I had to do, was I would be sent to go to the registered office and read the articles of a company.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding.
Oh, it was my
before,
God.
Before computers and stuff, when we were going to execute against a company. But now, of course, it's online. But the shareholders agreement is not searchable unless you're a shareholder
and the ease of having these types of things in a shareholders agreement is you can amend it and redo it and update it as many times as you want. Articles, if there's changes, those need to be filed. So that's not something that you would want to register a notice of change of articles every time over.
That's right.
So whether or not you've incorporated a company or you're looking to incorporate a company or, you know, you're one of those favorite clients of ours who self-incorporated, these are all things that you have to sit back and think about and really consider whether you need a shareholders agreement. And sometimes even a half an hour, 20-minute call with one of the lawyers from our office will prompt you to think through, you know, do I need this? And we'll ask questions to get you to think through what you don't have in place and what could happen without that. So
yeah, and maybe it's just as a final thought, shareholders agreements, they can be fairly expensive. And I think that does disincline a lot of people.
Not always.
You're absolutely right.
I think I don't know.
There's a cost.
There's definitely a cost, but if you're on a very, simple business structure, there's nothing overly complicated. Maybe you want some buyout rights. You're looking to add the shotgun in, whatever. We have a unanimous list that we've put together. I mean, I think I've charged as little as what we charge for a purchase of a house, like a residential house with a mortgage. So
okay,
it doesn't that, have
be a
to
very
be
very straightforward.
Yeah, very straightforward. Yeah. So where there is, and that's like anything we do, whether it's a business transaction or even a real estate deal, when there's more complications, more issues, there's more negotiation, we're going back and forth, we're editing, things are getting, ripped apart and we're constantly negotating terms. Yeah, then
any time that you're dealing with a lawyer, we charge based on our time. But I guess the point I wanted to make here is, they don't have to be, to take your point, they don't have to be all that expensive.
Yeah.
They can be. But the amount that you put into a shareholders agreement is nothing like what litigation costs
or mediation costs.
Oh my goodness!
Man.
So if you can afford anything, I mean, this is a really good investment in the future of the company and protecting your investment, because boy, litigation is way more expensive. All right, and with that, we will talk to you next time. It's Clay Williams and Tanvir Gill signing off.
FHMP lawyers are rooted in community and ready to help. Send your business law questions to podcast@fhplawyers.com.